Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Her Journey Told podcast. On this show, we will focus on strengthening women's mental fitness through sharing the joy, struggle, and wisdom of each woman's journey. Our show is powered by Pivotal Moments. Go to pivotalmoments.org to learn more. Hello, and welcome to the Her Journey Told podcast. This podcast is powered by Pivotal Moments Media. I'm your host, Sandy Lutton, and I'm so super excited today to be joined here today by my good friend and fearless leader of Equality League and founder, Mara Gubwan. Mara, welcome.
Thank you, Sandy. It's my pleasure.
So I know I saw you earlier this week, had the pleasure of seeing you in person, which is such a treat these days, and in New York. And I know you've been extremely busy. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. And I'm just curious, like, what has the last 24 hours looked like for you?
Equality League got involved in the Afghan humanitarian crisis because, of course, our mandate is to advance gender equality, and we're focused on access, equality, and safety for women and girls in sport worldwide. We know that Afghan female athletes are a vulnerable group, and so we've been helping with the evacuation and resettlement of a very large number.
Well, we all know, I mean, this is the whole Afghan situation is just horrendous, and there's no easy answers to how we solve this problem. And there's a lot of different people going at it in a lot of different directions. I'm just curious, have you seen successes? Can you share with us a little bit about, and I know you can't share a whole lot because I get a lot of this stuff is confidential and it's very risky for those people who are trying to get out of the country. But have you seen some success? Are there some positive things coming out of this?
The football community has been outstanding, really taking responsibility for the football athletes in their community. Whereas the reason the Equality League is so deeply involved is because we saw that women and girls from other sports were really being left behind. There was no entity that was really taking responsibility and trying to help them find safe haven. You know, the issue we have is that the Western world, including Americans like us and others, really use sport for empowerment and had very, you know, numerous initiatives empowering women and girls in Afghanistan over the years when the Taliban were not in control.
Right.
So, as a result, suddenly, you know, they've resumed control and they're not in favor of female and empowerment. You know, we've already seen that education has been restricted. And same thing with sport. You know, it's been quite sad because many of the athletes actually burned their jerseys, you know, burned their certificates, buried their medals and trophies so that they could remove evidence that they have been empowered and that they actually were empowered and both promoted in media. So even social media posts, they all had to remove like their Facebook accounts, showing like wonderful victories and accomplishments because that gives images for the Taliban to identify and possibly pursue and harm.
So this was done out of fear of being called out for something that they were very proud of and are very proud of, but now it's life-threatening for them, right?
Certainly these elite athletes have competed around the world. They've been exposed and revealed, and therefore very, very vulnerable. So that's why when you were asking me what I can say, we have been extremely quiet, my very, very small team, and we have really been kind of pained. We celebrate those who succeed in evacuating, but it's also painful when this comes out in the news because time after time, it shuts the route. It shuts the doors for those who are following.
Wow. I mean, this really is, potentially life or death situations that you're dealing with here. So I want to back up for a minute and go back to, so I know you as with many titles, right? When we first got connected, I knew that you were doing forensic accounting and work like that. You had started EQL, Equality League, and you were working on many, many different things and had touched so many amazing projects. How did you take us back a few years and how did you get started? Because I know you started the organization several years ago. How did this all come about for you?
So this is actually my second nonprofit that advances women's rights and gender equality through sport. The first one was focused on Muslim female athletes. It was really focused on media, but kind of helped to transform it into an advocacy organization. And we succeeded in forming a coalition, kind of creating a strategy for the first time, which we're using repeatedly, by finding an athlete as the affected individual to put at the center of an advocacy campaign, leverage our networks and resources around her in order to reach decision makers. Mm. And so that actually worked to overturn the decades-long hijab ban in basketball so that Muslim women could participate and compete internationally. So with that formula, I knew that we wanted to continue the work, but include all women and girls worldwide. So, and then we just jumped into that before we had a logo or our official name, because I observed and listened and read the impact statements of the Nassar gymnast survivors. And so by doing so, I searched who is doing this work on the topic of sexual abuse in sport, and specifically child sexual abuse in sport. And it was only Nancy Hogshead Makar, the founder and CEO of Champion Women. So when I realized she was doing this more or less by herself, I just contacted her, asked her, could I be of help? And that's how it started. And so we really are focused on that. And you will have recently seen even Simone Biles and testified again. This is ongoing, and it really does require a coalition to be pushing for this change. So that's one topic. And then recently discovered again through Nancy Hogshead Makar that there's the terrible discriminatory gaps in between college and women in sport. So we announced a Title IX campaign, which will seek to close the $1 billion in scholarships, $162 million in recruitment, and you know, innumerable hundreds of thousands of opportunities, meaning teams and, you know, spots, player positions, benefits and treatment that college women are just not receiving.
Wow. So you saw a need essentially, and you said, I'm going to take this on and I'm going to create this and I'm going to try to fill this gap is what I'm hearing you say.
We pride ourselves on tackling like the hardest and the worst gender inequities. So, of course, we did the FIBA hijab ban overturn. Another recent victory was the overturn of the 40-year-old ban on Iranian women. The 41 million Iranian women and girls were not allowed to enter stadiums to watch men's football matches. And so you're exactly right. Where we see, or where I see that there is an egregious problem, we try to help solve it, because we know with my powerful board and our community that we can reach the decision makers. And so we call it grass tops advocacy.
I love it. So you just teed me up for my next question, because I know it takes a lot to do this type of work, but what does it take? I know it takes a community, it takes money, but what does it take? I mean, you have so much fortitude and you just work tirelessly and fearlessly, which is one of the things that you've always inspired in me, is just to be fearless and go for it. But what does it take? If there was someone out there who said, I want to help too, what does it take? What do they need to do? What can they do? What are the options?
I am small but mighty, and actually EQL is still small and mighty. What would help us certainly is if we had a real staff, a full-time staff. Basically, like this work on the Afghan crisis was unexpected, and it's just because we understand and recognize it as a crisis that no one else is addressing, that we all our other work on hold, including our fundraising. So I'm working with a wonderful colleague who's volunteered all her time. But the truth is, this is going to continue for months, you know, several months and into the years in terms of the resettlement process. And if you reach elite levels of sport, you know that this is somebody's passion and love. And we want to help them to restore and maintain their athlete identities by creating playbooks that are athlete-centered so that communities can provide funding, equipment, and experiences to help with this resettlement wherever they're welcomed. So that, it really does come down to funding. You know, I'll just be very direct with you because it is human hours that has taken so much. I would say the resources that we've depleted the most is our energy, our time and energy. And if we had additional staff, we would be able to allocate, like, and take, you know, what do you call it? Delegate. Yeah, I'm not very familiar with that word.
Well, you have to have someone to delegate to, right?
Basically, yeah, we need to delegate. We could be a little even more effective and organized. Because I really must say that in this process, because we are a small team and because we have come to know the athletes and some of their dependents and coaches who were attempting to evacuate, it's really been an emotional drain because we're mindful of what they're going through and we want to be supportive, but it is very difficult to field message after message. You're my only hope. When is it my turn? What happens next? And we're working with a wonderful ally, but they can only do so much because there are tremendous negotiations with different countries and the Taliban that are underway. So we can only try to be supportive, and that feels not altogether helpful.
Yeah. So I know a lot about your organization because I've spent a quality time with you learning about it. So one thing, so I notice what happens in the work that you're doing is a crisis happens and you all jump in and step up and create a task force and really start trying to figure out what is the strategy behind solving this crisis. But you've also taken a different approach to how do we prevent crises. So talk a little bit about your youth council and the work that you're doing there and how you're training these youths to become advocates for themselves.
This group is something I'm very proud of. During the COVID quarantine, we just realized that the children had lost sport very abruptly, meaning all of their practices were canceled and they had a lot of free time. So I saw it both as an opportunity to kind of give sport back to them, but in a different way, in helping them to develop as advocates. And that was also somewhat selfish because I'm trying to create a pipeline of our successors so that I can retire. Like, I don't necessarily want to create every campaign and then execute it. What I thought would be great and what we have now done is that we created an athlete advocacy training program, which with a sponsor, we'll be able to professionalize and distribute worldwide in multiple languages. And effectively, it's what we used to find the anyone who takes it, the athlete would be more or less the affected individual who creates their own campaign to make the changes that they want. So we actually recruited this youth council as our pilot group for the athlete advocacy training. But because the Equality League board is, you know, in the thick of things, Nancy Hogshead Makar, who had written the first draft of the Safe Sport Act and was also advocating to pass the Empowering Olympians, Paralympians, and Amateur Athletes Act, we realized the children could advocate in real time. So when I invited them to the council, my invitation said, like, please join me to influence the highest levels of US government and sports governance. And they wrote a letter to Congress, and ultimately this Empowering Olympians Act will result in rewriting the rules of governance for the USOPC, the Olympic and Paralympic Committee, on down through all the national governing bodies to wow. youth clubs. And it was all inspired by the Nassar gymnasts and the several congressional hearings that followed. You know, it was clearly that there are problems with the policy and the environment. And so in real time, our youth council is getting involved. They're speaking up for themselves and their demographic, but actually their advocacy will help their role models and heroes in real time. So it's wonderful. Yeah. We're so also working, just to finish, we're also working on the equal pay issue to support the US women's national team as well.
So they're inspiring the future generation. So give us a little bit, just a general profile of what your youth council looks like. What's the age, sports? Give us a profile of that.
Well, they're primarily teenagers. But we're really proud of them because it's mixed gender. We actually have six sets of siblings, nice. Sometimes boys and girls. There's 16 in total. We now have five in college. So it's really most of the older high schoolers are leaders at the moment. But I must say, we have an 11-year-old who's very outspoken, and she's going to be a star. I know that. And that's what it takes. You know, it takes some courage. And what we're doing is we're positioning them as messengers and amplifiers for the experts. They are not experts, but, you know, those who have come before them have studied the data and given us the language. That's what we're using, because the truth is, people are interested in hearing what these student athletes have to say about their own protection and their own futures in sport. So in a way that sometimes an adult expert may not be listened to in the same way, because they're advocating for the younger generations, the youth council is advocating for themselves.
So obviously, we talk a lot about mental fitness here at Her Journey Told, and we like to share these stories of courage and how people find that and build that fortitude. And I hear what you're saying with this youth council. And I mean, we already know there's so much data out there about the positive mental aspects that sports has on an individual. And I love the fact that, you know, in this country, we've been very fortunate that youth sports is a growing field. It's really important. And there's got to be gender equality in that. And you've got this younger generation who's come together now and supporting that and saying they're, you know, really raising up their voices to do that. Is there a way to get other people involved? How is this youth council inspiring other people to do the same?
Mm-hmm. So we're still working on this aspect of, you know, being more public, but the platforms we will be using or starting to use are all digital, because that's where the children live. It's actually where their parents live, on these right. Instagram accounts, you know, on their phones. So when I said that they'll be messengers and amplifiers, most of the information will be conveyed via video, social media posts, Instagram live discussions, and so forth. So our goals are basically to build the community, to build the student athlete followers on Instagram and most of their parents.
How do you train them? How do you train them to do this type of work?
So what we're trying to do is really pair up or create smaller groups where they receive some individual attention from not only me, but I have wonderful volunteer advisors who are experts in media, journalism, former athletes themselves. So to train them, they're taking the online athlete advocacy training so that they understand the full scope of the process. But then these smaller pieces where for the digital content, we need some stories or we need some interviews, we need some photos, that we're all doing those in smaller group sessions.
So I'm going to ask you some more personal questions now about the work you're doing. What has been the toughest project you've had to work on?
I think that this Afghan attempt at evacuation has been the most difficult because I also have little control in it. I am not personally negotiating with anyone. You know, we're working in partnership with a wonderful sporting body that we trust and are kind of the facilitators. You know, we're in between, right? In between the athletes and actually those who have more power. So it's kind of hard when you don't have that power. It's hard when you know that you might be somebody's only hope for a future and certainly a good future somewhere else. And then also that inevitably some will be left behind. And so we're really, as you mentioned, mental health for my team, like we're very clear that we also want to have therapy and some guidance on how we're dealing with this vicarious trauma from our empathy for what's happening. But then again, the decisions that are made and we have to live with them.
You do say that. I mean, I understand the lack of control over the situation, but you do play a critical role in being the voice for these athletes and these activists. And, you know, I think don't underestimate how powerful that is, because if it weren't for you and your team driving this message and getting it to the right people who do have some control over this situation, not that any of us really have control over it, but we're doing the best we can, right? So, I mean, I think that's such an important piece of it too. And it's so important to be able to give a voice to the people that don't have it. So kudos to you and your team for doing that. I mean, that's so important.
But also kudos to you, my friend, for inviting me. Our partner FIFA did evacuate a group of around 100 yesterday. Amazing. And they had asked us that we don't want this to be public. So we will eventually share more details. But for now, the only message we were trying to get, not to anyone, but the Afghans, was that you're not forgotten. Like we're sticking with you. We're trying our best. And if we can't do it, we'll get to the people who can. So that was first and foremost that we wanted the Afghan athletes and their families to know we're on it, because again, we didn't see anyone else taking responsibility. And my colleague has been incredible. What I can say to you, this all began, and this is interesting, that we have one athlete ambassador from that very first organization who had asked me if I could help evacuate her family members, which numbered nine in total. And because I contacted the State Department, I learned that Equality League had referring partner status, and therefore we could refer others to be evacuated. And that's how this all began. If not for the one Afghan athlete who asked me to help her family, I wouldn't have known that we could help others. And so my colleague, she contacted the Afghan member of the International Olympic Committee. And that's how we got the names of the entire national basketball team.
Well, I think the work that you're doing is absolutely amazing. And the one thing that I'm drawing from this conversation is there is impact that one individual can provide, but the impact is multiplied, right? When you can build that coalition and bring that community together. So again, I say kudos to you for being able to do that and accomplish that. And I know this is an ongoing project. It will be for a while. And so I wanted to ask you, because I think in most of your projects are similar to this, where they are ongoing, it's constantly something you're continuing to work at, getting legislation changed, changing people's minds, changing the stigma around things, changing discriminatory practices. Has there been a project that you've worked on that you said, wow, that was like, where have you seen a real success that you could say, wow, we can say we accomplished this?
So, but with the Iranian stadium ban, because it had been in place for so many decades, and it was a creative strategy that we knew the real, you know, people in power in the country weren't necessarily going to be the ones who we could influence, but we could influence FIFA because of the power of sport and football. They were able to influence the country. And that's how the strategy worked. So that was something really, I do feel proud that I contributed to that.
That's amazing. I'm always inspired by you. I feel so fortunate to be able to have access to people like you who, by the way, and I never can say no to you. You're so persuasive and you approach things in a way, but it's also because I see the work you're doing and the effort you put into everything you do. And that inspires me. I'm like, how could I say no to her? Because she is living and doing everything that she's asking other people to step up and do as well. So I appreciate that. I want to give the audience an opportunity to be able to support and help in some ways. So share with us your website for EQL, how people can donate, or if there are other ways they contribute, let us share that with us.
Sure. We actually created a fund specifically to support the Afghan athletes. And our website is weareeql.org. So there's a page, it's very clearly identifiable. And that support will not only go to help any of the operations, because as I mentioned, for 2 months now, some colleagues and I just launched into action, but this wasn't in, you know, the EQL workflow. And so that is something that we're retroactively fundraising for. And then beyond that, there are just so many other logistics that it will be helpful to even just to support with additional staff members. And then beyond that, of course, we want to be able to raise funds so that we can help the Afghans once they evacuate to make certain that it's accomplished with dignity. We want to be able to supplement, maybe if we find that they need a little more than what's provided by the country who welcomes them.
Great. Well, thank you so much. There's so many stories here that we have just scratched the surface on. So I would love it if you would come back, share more details of some of these stories and projects that you all have worked on, but also give us an update when you can on the Afghan situation and how we can, as an audience, support that.
Well, as you won't say no to me, I won't say no to you, Sandy. So I'll be happy, and I hope that I'll have good news to share.
Awesome. Well, then my job's done here. I've won you over.
Long ago.
Right. Well, thank you again. This has been really great. I've enjoyed this conversation, and I know that our audience has too. You've been listening to the Her Journey Told podcast, powered by Pivotal Moments Media. Please join us for future podcasts. Episodes. You've been listening to the Her Journey Told podcast, powered by Pivotal Moments. For more inspirational content, go to pivotalmoments.org. I'm Sandy Lutton. Thanks so much for joining us. Make sure to keep an eye out for more episodes where podcasts can be heard. See you next time.